For more than a decade, Saturdays and Illegal Curve have been synonymous with one another, with insight, analysis, and interviews regarding the Winnipeg Jets, the Manitoba Moose, and all around the NHL. Here are Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. With Dave Minuk, with Ezra Ginsberg, I am your host, Drew Mandel. Settle in, pour a cup of coffee. We got a couple hours of Jets talk coming your way on this Saturday morning. First and foremost, want to give a big shout out to some friends of ours who helped us with the brand new intro that you may have seen this morning. First, Alex Albany doing a great job bringing that all together. Our buddy Joe from Winnipeg with the music in the background. That was some great work from Joe there, strumming up some tunes for us. And our good friend Mandy Hsu voicing over the background. Thanks to them all for their help in the new Illegal Curve intro. Gentlemen, good to see you on this Saturday morning. Dave, your head is on fire as per usual. Hopefully your opinions and your takes will be just as hot as your head.
Yeah, I love that. Love that new intro, boys. Love that we can reconnect from, you know, with some former friends from Bell Media. Mandy, of course, on Bounce FM, and then Alex, obviously, you know, part of TSN 1290 Radio. So it's nice to get that in for the new season coming up, and we got hockey on the ice to talk about, boys. What's better than that?
It's true. Dave, how's your hair? Dave might be a little
hair
choppy
is on this fire, morning, but you know what? It's good. We're all good. I appreciate your intro. And what's that?
Nothing. You were just a little choppy.
Well, I got Ezzy Ginsberg using up my internet. That's why I'm a little bit choppy.
Well, you know, you guys.
I'm using the same internet as Dave is. I don't know what you're talking about here. I'm not using any super network or anything like that. I'm just using the regular Wi-Fi that you gave me, Dave.
We'll let Dave figure out his internet issues.
And I didn't hear a single.
I'm gonna try and figure this out.
Yeah. Okay, you guys, figure that out, Dave. You know, good time to be doing it is now, 5 minutes after the show started.
I think Dave probably made some good points there, Drew. I didn't hear any single one of them, but I think he might have said something very, you know, introspective there.
I'm sure he did. Undoubtedly, he was being very deep and insightful at that point in time. Ezzy, let's get started with the Winnipeg Jets. As you mentioned, there's some actual hockey being played on the ice, not necessarily a game so much, but practice, this professional mini camp, as they've been calling it, ahead of the start of training camp next Thursday. And you know, to me, there's been some interesting points that have come out of this week so far. But the most interesting, I think, had to do with some of the comments coming from Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice, especially his comment that, you know, quote, this is the best balanced lineup we've had. And he goes on and talks about how, you know, back in, you know, 2018 when they made the run, you know, the defense was probably a little bit ahead of where the offense was in terms of on the aging curve. And then, of course, we know what happened with the defense, and then the offense was better than the defense. And then, you know, now he's saying, I guess they're all sort of on the right plane and on the right level for the start of this 2021 hockey season. To me, some very interesting comments from the Jets head coach so far this season.
Yeah, Drew, and it shouldn't come as a surprise, because we know, you know, that this Jets team has aspirations of going and winning a Stanley Cup, right? Because when you bring back the majority of your team from last year, you know, minus Mason Appleton, you know, minus Matty Perreault, you know, a couple veterans like Nate Thompson and Trevor Lewis, and I guess, you know, you throw in Derek Forbort and Tucker Poolman in there. I mean, now that I think about it, there actually has been quite a bit of turnover, but the core of the team, right? Like, we're talking about the veterans like Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler, and bringing in Paul Stastny on a one-year contract, Connor Hellebuck. Like, the list goes on. The core of this team has not changed from last year, and then you supplement that with Nate Schmidt and Brendan Dillon on the back end. So there's no doubt that we talked about this last week. Like, on paper, no one's going to argue that this Jets team is more talented than the team that got swept in the second round against Montreal, right? So not surprised Paul Maurice said that, but a little bit surprised, Drew, in the sense that you usually don't hear that from the head coach you know, before training camp has even started. Yeah. You usually hear these guys, and you know, coaches I'm referring to, and general managers, and you usually kind of, you know, you hear them tempering expectations, right? Like, I don't think you're going to hear many coaches or GM saying that, oh yeah, we're gunning for the Stanley Cup. I mean, let's be honest. If you're not gunning for the Stanley Cup, you're in the wrong business. All 32 teams should be aiming for a Stanley Cup, and that includes the Seattle Kraken. I mean, I think it's going to be very tough with the Kraken's roster to win the Stanley Cup, but this is why you play the game. You play the game to win the Stanley Cup. But yeah, Paul Maurice, you know, those are very strong words for him, you know, in his first media availability of the fall.
You're absolutely right to your point there, Ezzy, is that usually head coaches, I mean, this is a sort of a rule of thumb in sports. It's a rule of thumb often in politics with the election coming up on Monday. And don't worry, we're not going to talk about that. But you sort of lessen expectations and then you overperform. But after you lessen those expectations, you know, Paul Maurice here isn't saying, you know, this is he didn't come out and say we're going to win the Stanley Cup. But he certainly, you know, didn't take any of the expectations or take any of the pressure, I would say, away from this team. I think people here in Winnipeg, I think people around the NHL look at this Jets team and say they're improved. They're improved particularly on their back end. They still have, you know, if not the best goalie in the league, then they have a top two or top three goalie in the league. And now they have better defense in front of them, in front of him. So the expectations naturally are going to be higher entering this season, Dave. And Paul Maurice, with his comments this week, certainly didn't do anything to try and pour cold water on those expectations, I would say.
You're right. And the reason he didn't is because no one would believe him if he tried. I mean, that's just the reality. I mean, the truth is his 2017-18 team was a pretty deep team. It was a pretty good team. So when he made that comment, I thought, well, that was a pretty good team. I mean, again, the forwards were younger and Connor Hellebuyck was, you know, kind of coming into his own. Yeah. But the defense obviously was very established, very good there. And to me, he just knows Winnipeg is a sophisticated enough market that people aren't going to believe if you say this isn't one of the deepest teams you've ever had here, because it is. And we know that everybody knew the forward group was good. You've got a Vezina goaltender and Connor Hellebuyck, so there's no question there. And now your defense appears to have been, you know, resolved from where it was last year to now. And so if you've got that and you actually tried to temper expectations, people would find it, I would think, very disingenuous personally. So I think he really didn't have he knows this is a year for him. The Jets are going for it. Okay. You know, like I said, Nate Schmidt acknowledged that. They're not in a rebuild. This is a team that is going for the Stanley Cup. Now, they know that the Tampa Bay Lightning are still the cream of the crop, even though they, you know, lost essentially their second or third line. But the reality is this team, no one would believe it. You couldn't, like, again, if people were sitting here going, oh, well, this team isn't that good and the expectations aren't high and, you know, and if they exceed the expectations, well, that's great. Every single person in this market, for the most part, I would suggest, is paying attention, because that's what they do in Winnipeg and in Manitoba and elsewhere who follow the Jets. And they know that this team is as deep as they've been and that they're going for the Stanley Cup. So to suggest anything otherwise, I again, like I said, I'll go back to the word disingenuous. I think it would just be disingenuous to make that assertion.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Drew makes a good point, you know, in terms of it was a little bit surprising to hear that type of stuff in mid-September. But I personally like to hear that, because I think, you know, to Dave's point, there's nobody on this Jets roster that doesn't believe that this team is a Stanley Cup contender, right? Like, I think they thought they were a Stanley Cup contender last year, but they knew that there were some pretty big deficiencies on the back end, right? Like, you know, we've gone over this, like the expected goals against, the shots against, the high danger shots against. I mean, the Jets relied too much on Connor Hellebuyck. I don't care what anybody says. Connor Hellebuck's goaltending bailed them out of a lot of games. He won them a lot of games, you know, not solely based on his goaltending, but a lot of it had to do with his goaltending. He's one of the best goalies in the world, if not the best goalie in the world. But now you've brought in two 30-year-old defensemen in Schmidt and Dillon, who are bona fide top four defensemen, right? So, I mean, this team is better. They're going to be very tough to play against, I think. And if you think about it, guys, like back in early July, we were debating, you know, whether the Jets were going to expose Logan Stanley or Dylan DeMello. Well, now that's potentially your third pair. It might be the best third pair in the league.
You know, it's certain. There's, I mean, strictly looking at talent, they're a more talented team. And then you look at all their competitors around them, particularly in the Western Conference. And it's not to say that the Jets don't have warts, because they certainly do. And there's a rule of thumb that says, you know, you can't win without a number one defenseman. And I don't think anybody would say the Jets have a clear-cut number one defenseman on their roster. I would say the Jets have, you know, five or six defensemen that are in that sort of 2, 3, 4 range, with two being at the absolute high end of that. They have nobody who's a number one. But you look all the way around. You look in their division. I mean, most people would say the team with the most talent in their division is probably Colorado. But Colorado,
I don't think there's any doubt.
Right. But Colorado, you know, you'd say, okay, what about their goaltending? I mean, you don't know what they have necessarily in the combination of Darcy Kemper and Pavel Francouz. And that was what you know, hurt them at the end of the year last year in the playoffs, is, you know, their goaltending ultimately wasn't up to snuff. You know, so you just look around and there's no reason why, as you sit here today, and we talk about expectations, there's no reason why, with the talent the Jets have on their roster, they couldn't be, not necessarily that they shouldn't be, but that they couldn't be a Stanley Cup finalist out of the Western Conference. I know cart before the horse, and I admit, you know, it's, you know, September 18th here, so we're probably getting a little ahead of ourselves, but you just look at strictly from a roster, a roster standpoint, and you compare it to all the other upper echelon teams in the West, and they all have holes, Jets too, but there's no when your hole isn't goaltending and your biggest hole has been shored up to a great deal, it's why you have these expectations and why people have confidence that this team is going to go places this coming season.
Right. And you can say it's ridiculous that we're talking about, you know, Stanley Cup and Stanley Cup contention, and, you know, training camp hasn't even started. But the reality is, you don't give up those draft picks and bring in Nate Schmidt and Brendan Dillon at, you know, the potential risk of Ville Heinola not playing in your lineup, right? And the reason why I say, you know, risk, you know, I guess the risk might be the wrong word, but, you know, that means that a guy like Ville Heinola will probably play, you know, a good portion of the season in the American Hockey League, right? So what I'm saying is, maybe it's at the cost of a guy like Ville Heinola or Dylan Samberg. And it's not a bad thing, right? Because Dave will tell you, if Ville Heinola and Dylan Samberg are your top two defensemen in the American Hockey League, I mean, you're going to have a really good team. These are really skilled guys that are going to be in the NHL eventually, but you don't make those types of moves. You don't bring in a guy like Riley Nash, you know, unless you're trying to, you know, compete for a Stanley Cup, because that might be, again, at the cost of, you know, a younger player like David Gustafson not getting a spot. Now, we'll get into this later, because I think there's a good chance, you know, David Gustafson could be your fourth line center to start the season, but there's always a chance, you know, that someone else beats him out in training camp, right? Like Evgeny Svechnikov, Dominik Toninato, who we're going to have on later. I mean, these guys are also trying to, you know, push in into that top 12, right? So the point is that the moves that Chevy made in the offseason, you don't make those moves unless you believe that your team can go all the way. And again, it's mid-September here, guys. Like, we're getting way ahead of ourselves. And you know, people might think, you know, we're being a little bit of homers here because we're based in Winnipeg. I know that a lot of Jets fans watching and listening on the podcast are going to love to hear it. But they addressed their defense, and they didn't give up anybody on their roster. So again, I don't think they're the most talented team in the league, but I absolutely think they're in conversation to go, you know, have a really good regular season and go on a Stanley Cup run. Yes, Tampa Bay is the team that everyone's gunning for. Colorado is arguably, you know, the most talented team, you know, in the NHL. But I think, you know, the Jets are not that far off.
Yeah, to me, Dave, I thought that some of the comments we've heard over the last couple of days from Ville Heinola and from Dylan Samberg, I thought were particularly interesting to me, in the sense that they know, I mean, they're not silly. They're not foolish. They don't put blinders on. They know that there doesn't appear to be a spot for them, you know, in the Jets top six, but you have to like what you heard from both of those guys and saying, yeah, we know what happened, but I can't control that. So I'm just going to do what I can, and I'm going to work hard. And I expect that I'm going to try and overtake some of the guys who are so-called penciled into the top six. And Ville Heinola sounds like he had a big offseason, getting bigger, getting stronger. And you just have to like that there's already that internal pressure coming from within the organization, where the young guys are saying to the veteran guys, yeah, you might have the job on September 18th, but don't for a second rest on your laurels, because I'm coming to take that job from you. If not today, maybe a month from now, or 2 months from now, or 6 months from now, or next season. But that pressure is constantly churning through the Winnipeg Jets organization, particularly on the back end right now.
Yeah, and I think this move does a few things. One, it insulates the young defensemen who from putting them into situations where they're not quite ready for. Look at what Atlanta did with Zach Bogosian, for example, how they maybe jumped him a little bit early into the lineup. And this allows the Jets to insulate players like Dylan Sandberg, like Ville Heinola, like a Johnny Kovacevic. And the truth is that, like as you said, you'll never hear me say guys playing in the AHL is a bad thing, because it gives them a ton of experience. And the second part from the insulation, Drew, is that you're giving these guys an opportunity to be hungry and know, like, nobody's getting had to hand. Look, we know the veterans are the veterans. They're the guys who are going to have spots. Ville Heinola has to be looking at Logan Stanley's spot saying that isn't, solid. And I still have an opportunity to get into there. So I think if I'm Ville Heinola, I'm not looking to overtake Josh Morrissey. I'm not looking to, well, I mean, you are, but eventually. Sure. But you're not expecting it necessarily for this season.
Right.
So you're not expecting Josh Morrissey. You're not expecting, Brendan Dillon's spot. But Logan Stanley, there's a spot that if Ville Heinola comes in and challenges, nobody, like we've talked about it. It's not set in stone that Logan Stanley is that, third pairing left side defenseman. It seems likely given what he was able to do last year. But Ville Heinola could come in and to the point. Now, I haven't been at training camp yet, but the truth is that, or the mini pro camp, I should say, but the reality is the reports, like you were saying, Drew, are that he's bigger, stronger, still has his speed though, which obviously is, that was something Josh Morrissey did, unfortunately, when he was, a young guy, is that he put on a lot of weight to kind of adjust to that NHL game, the man's game. The problem is it took away his speed. So he had to kind of adjust himself, the following season because of, the inefficiencies that it led to. And I think Ville Heinola, from the sounds of it, has managed to figure out that strength situation without necessarily losing the speed, which for him is a bit of an asset. So look, the truth is, I think it's a great thing for the Jets organization, because you didn't want, like, I can't tell you how many people were like clamoring last year. And I get why you'd want to see a young guy versus like an old guy, where you like a Dylan Sandberg versus a Nate Beaulieu. I understand that. I'm not maligning that vision. But the truth is that people hadn't even seen Dylan Sandberg play college. Hadn't even seen him play in a pro game yet.
The backup quarterback phenomenon.
Well, yeah, and already he's in your lineup. And the truth is, and I watched every Manitoba Moose game last season, I think, for the most part, and Dylan Sandberg was...
I think you watched every single game twice, to be honest with you.
The point is that he was good developing in the AHL last season, and that was the bright spot for him last season. And if he can challenge for it, great. And if he doesn't have it yet ready... And you know what? You put him in the AHL, he'll develop, like I said, alongside Ville Heinola, alongside Johnny Kovacevic, alongside Declan Chisholm, Leon Gavanke, and it's not a bad thing. And and you'll get the minutes down there. And quite frankly, looking at the way the Jets have made these signings, I actually think they've created a pretty good AHL roster for the Manitoba Moose. So I actually think the Moose are going to have a pretty good team, regardless of what happens up here with the big club. And obviously, you're going to lose guys throughout the course of the year. But I think it'll be a very good the group last year was very cohesive and they enjoyed playing with each other. But I think if this group can maintain that cohesiveness and add, I mean, they won last year too, but keep that element alive, I think it'll go a long way for development.
Look, winning is never a bad thing, especially when you're winning in the same system. And it's not like it's not like the Moose, when they're winning, they're doing so at the expense of development. It's all part and parcel with the development of the players and eventually feeding them, into the Winnipeg Jets system. So certainly, if the Jets are playing well and the Jets are going well and the Moose are playing well and the Moose are going well, then it's never a bad thing for both sides of the Winnipeg Jets and the True North organization. More from Paul Maurice, I thought it was, I just thought his comments were really interesting. I think he, a lot of talk this year is, who's got the pressure on them? Who's got the pressure on them? And, Pierre-Luc Dubois is at the front of everyone's list about, who has the pressure on him. And I thought his interview, and we'll talk about a little bit later on in the show, his interview with Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick on the 31 Thoughts podcast, I thought was really insightful and really interesting. And if you haven't heard that, check it out. It's on illegalcurve.com. You can find the link to it, Company Man. But, you know, and he was talking about, you know, the pressure that he's experiencing this year and after what was, in his words, also a lousy year last year. But I think Paul Maurice, of anybody on the roster, on the ice, behind the bench, in the organization, I think Paul Maurice has a lot of pressure on his shoulders this year because the pass, not that it's necessarily been a free pass, but, you know, the excuse or the reasoning of the defense and the lack of reinforcements coming via Kevin Cheveldayoff since the great defense departure of a couple years ago is all gone. And he knows he's got the defense. He knows his general manager went out and did him a favor. And now he knows that it's up to him to maximize the ability of not only those new defensemen, but the forwards that they play in front of and really overhaul the entire system and maybe get back to playing a style similar to 2017-18 when the Jets were way more aggressive and in their forecheck and way more aggressive at the offensive blue line than we saw the last couple of years where there definitely were much more of a passive mindset. I think that's going to be a fascinating element to watch the Paul Maurice, his usage, and the strategic approach to the game as we enter this coming season.
Yeah, it's a good point, Drew. And Kenny Wiebe wrote about that for Sportsnet. I mean, there's no doubt that when you have a Nate Schmidt and a Brendan Dillon on the back end, you're able to play more of an up-tempo pressure game. And that's what we saw from the Jets, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. And we didn't see that as much the last couple of years. A lot of that had to do with personnel. But to your point, I mean, there's always going to be pressure on a head coach of a professional sports team, right? I think that's such an obvious cliche, but there's definitely going to be more pressure this year, considering the moves that were made and you know, that quote unquote Wheeler window that our boy Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press likes to talk about, right? Like, the window for the Jets is now, and it's not going to be open forever. You know, Dave mentioned the Tampa Bay Lightning earlier. Like, could the Lightning compete for a Stanley Cup? Well, yeah, of course they can compete for a Stanley Cup, boys, because they've won the last two Stanley Cups and they've still got Nikita Kucherov and Victor Hedman and Steven Stamkos, Andre Vasilevsky. I mean, if you want me to go through the whole roster, I will. Losing Yanni Gourde and losing Blake Coleman, even losing like David Savard. I realize Savard was a rental and he signed with Montreal, but like Coleman and Gourde specifically, I mean, that was two-thirds of your third line. Tyler Johnson is also gone, but you know, he's not as big of a loss as Yanni Gourde and Blake Coleman. But the point is the Lightning are not going to be as deep this year. So I think this year is more wide open than it's ever been. And I think, you know, when you look at the Central Division, it's not as strong as it was back in 2017-18, right, guys? Like, in 2017-18, the Jets were constantly battling with the Nashville Predators for who was the best team in the Central Division. Well, this year it's going to be the Colorado Avalanche. And clearly, you know, the Jets do not have a Nathan MacKinnon. Like, Mark Scheifele is a top 10 forward in the league, in my opinion. But, I mean, Nathan MacKinnon is in a category of his own with Connor McDavid, mm-hmm. right? So, I mean, Colorado is stacked, and I think everyone is going to be in agreement that they're the team to beat in the Central. But the point is that, you know, this Jets team right now, the way they're constructed, the way I look at it, I mean, I think it's, you know, get to the Western Conference Final or it's going to be a huge disappointment.
That's the
minimum, Drew. I mean, you could even argue that getting to the Stanley Cup Final would be the minimum, but I think probably getting to the Western Conference Final is the minimum. And, you know, it's up for debate whether, you know, it's Stanley Cup or bust for this team.
Well, you know, it is similar to 17-18 in that, you know, if you look at the Western Conference as a whole, and I haven't really done my deep dive into the West yet for this season, but I would say, I think, you know, with a relative degree of confidence that the top three teams, or the, you know, Colorado and Vegas are probably, you know, the two best teams in the conference. Not to say that Vegas doesn't also have some holes on their roster, because they certainly do. And then, you know, the Jets are probably right behind those two teams. But you wonder, is it going to be similar to that second round series that we saw between the Jets and the Predators, where, you know, the two teams really beat each other up to a great degree? And then who knows what happens after that? I mean, we're, again, way ahead of ourselves. But, you know, I don't think we are wearing. I don't think we're Pollyanna here, and I don't think we're wearing you know, rose-colored glasses, to your point, Ezzy, in saying that there is a lot of pressure on this Jets team. And I think it starts with
Paul Maurice. That's a good thing. Like, and the thing is, like, we're not saying this is a negative thing. This is a good thing. Like, this group, I mean, we know that guys like Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele and Josh Morrissey, Nick Ehlers, like, these guys have wanted to win the Stanley Cup for a while now. Like, this, it's not like all of a sudden they've turned a switch and that's their goal now. I mean, their goal has always been the Stanley Cup, but now they have the personnel to do it, right? Like, when you bring in Nate Schmidt and you bring in Brenda Dillon, and again, they haven't brought in Bobby Orr and Ray Bourque here, but these are bona fide top four defensemen that are perfect fits for what the Jets needed, right? Like, you know, Brendan Dillon is that big-bodied left shot defenseman, can move the puck, chip in a bit offensively. Nate Schmidt is a guy, you know, that you can put on the top pair with Josh Morrissey. He can play power play, penalty kill, all situations. He can play 25 minutes a night. So these are the types of moves that the Jets needed to make. And then, you know, bringing in Paul Stastny, I think, was one of the more underrated moves, I should say, re-signing him, because then you have a guy that can play on the wing on your second line. He can center your second line. If he needs to play wing on the third line, he can. He's kind of got that Andrew Kopp type of flexibility. There's some questions, but think about it, guys. Like, one of David Gustafson, Evgeny Svechnikov, Jansen Harkins, like, one of these guys is not going to crack the Jets' top 12. Like, there's a lot of depth here beyond, you know, just the defense and the Jets core forwards. Like, the Jets have, I think, done a nice job, as we talked about earlier, of having some internal competition and having some good roster battles on those third and fourth lines.
Yeah, and to your point, the idea of, like, going back to Paul Maurice, I think there's no question. I think that, you know, otherwise it becomes a stale message, right? At a certain point, you have to start to look at the coach if with this group, and again, look, we're forecasting. The reality is that we don't know what's going to happen throughout the course of the season. You know, if a team has catastrophic injuries, and the team has catastrophic injuries, there's always things that can mitigate comments made on September 18th. But to your point, Drew, I don't see how, looking at this team right now, and if they're able to maintain this core group for the most part throughout the course of the season, anything less than Tezzi's point, anything less than a Stanley Cup appearance, a Western Conference final, like, to agree with Ezzy, like, that's kind of your minimum basis, and anything can happen. I mean, you know, the team that the other team that makes the Western Conference final is usually pretty good. You're guaranteed, even if your team is strong, a cakewalk into the Stanley Cup finals. We know how difficult it is for teams to be able to make the final four, let alone the final two. So I'm not going to just suggest that the Jets should be sleepwalking into a Stanley Cup appearance. Simply put, though, based on this roster, and look, there's still question marks. You know, Josh Morrissey had an incredibly tough year last year, obviously off the ice with everything he was going through, which was awful. And he's looking to bounce back on the ice this year. And you've got a guy like Nate Schmidt who had, you know, not a great season in Vancouver. He's excited to get started. He's looking forward to, you know, the opportunity here in Winnipeg. He knows he's going to be here in theory for, you know, four more years. So he's going to be established in the community. And I think it becomes a function of these guys know what they're going for. And nobody's going to be surprised about it. I mean, look, they're not going to be talking about after game one against the Ducks, you know, yes, we're a Stanley Cup team. But to Ezzy's point, you've Cheval Dayoff did what he had to do this summer, right? We said you couldn't have another summer where he didn't address the defense. Not only did he address the defense, he was able to address the opportunity to, you know, bring in guys like Evgeny Svechnikov. An interesting little, you know, first rounder with Detroit.
Yeah, you throw a dart on it. You throw a dart and see if you can hit a bullseye there.
He played in Cape Breton with Pierre-Luc Dubois. There's mm-hmm. obviously a connection there. And he seems like a guy who's hungry. And he's had some bad luck from an injury perspective. But he's able to come in and challenge. And maybe on this Jets roster, where he doesn't have as high an expectation as he did with the Wings, you know, I mean, look, we saw his comments yesterday. If you didn't, they're on legalcurve.com. You can watch them. But the point is that he sounds like a guy who sees an opportunity for himself. You know, maybe if Christian Vesalainen isn't able to seize that third line wing spot with, you know, Andrew Kopp and Adam Lowry, maybe Evgeny Svechnikov can. That's the beauty of training camp. And that's what we, you know, when we talked about it last week in the first show of the season, like I said, and I wasn't trying to hedge, but I just said training camp is where all of this stuff will kind of come out. We'll be able to see which guy was able to take his off-season training to that next level in order to give himself that opportunity. So there's a lot of different intriguing things, like, as he said, whether a guy like Gustafson can make it, where Riley Nash plays. And obviously everybody's going to end up playing anyways because guys get injured. But ultimately, Paul Maurice has received the best, probably one of the best, deepest teams, you know, maybe paralleling 2017-18 that he'll ever have. And again, the forwards now, think about it though. 2017-18, his defense was excellent.
Yeah.
His forward group was young and his goaltender was getting there. Well, now his goaltender is there. His forwards are older and his defense is now there. We think. So there is that removal of that excuse. And now it's on the coaching staff. I mean, you know, look, a coach doesn't just tap a guy on the shoulder and say, okay, it's your turn to go out. Coaching is like chess. You have to be able to make moves. So this coaching staff is going to have to be able to make moves, and we'll see if they can do that this season.
Well said, Mr. Manouk. Let's take our first break of the morning. When we come back, Dominic Toninato, Winnipeg Jets forward, is going to join us in about 5 to 7 minutes' time. More Jets talk, more of your comments. We're having fun. It's Saturday morning. You're watching, you're chatting, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. We're back Saturday morning, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, here live on YouTube, live on all of our social media platforms. Maybe you're listening afterwards via the podcast, wherever you may be listening, joining us on this Saturday morning. Thank you so much for doing it. Reminder, if you haven't yet, smash that like button, leave us some comments, give us a thumbs up, subscribe to the YouTube channel. That way you get alerted each and every time we go live here on this fine platform.
Drew, Dave, I just go ahead.
I was going to say, Dave, a comment from Joe from Winnipeg wanting to know what happened to Yuna Luoto. His contract mutually terminated, I think, between him and the Jets. Is this just a function of him probably wanting to go home, seeing that there's not much of a future necessarily at the NHL level here in Winnipeg?
Yeah, that's my guess. I mean, you got to remember he was a childhood friend of Patrick Laine. Patrick Laine obviously no longer in Winnipeg. And I think he went home for the summer, looked at the Jets, maybe realized his future would be playing for the Moose in the AHL and decided that he'd rather play in Liga. So, you know, I mean, he was an interesting player. He you know, but his role essentially has been taking over guys like Toninato, guys like Riley Nash. They're, you know, probably a higher level than Yuna Luoto. So he was okay. I mean, he didn't put up any points for the Jets and he didn't have a ton for the Moose either, but you know, I mean, he was a good soldier. He had an injury that ended the season early in his first year here in Winnipeg. And, so he went – there was a termination of the contract. So they terminated the last year of the deal, and he's now, I'm going to guess, signed in the league. I haven't seen anything about that yet. I did watch 2019 fourth-round pick of the Jets, Henry Nikkanen, score his first goal of the season for his new team, the Pelicans, over in Liga action. So – There's some Jets prospects in action over in Finland.
Now I got to find out. Now, were you watching that game live? Because if you're watching that game live, we might have to stage an intervention. If you were watching highlights because you heard that Nikkanen scored, then I can accept that a little bit.
I like to watch what the prospects are. I know people appreciate when they find out what's going on. So the process, it's never live. I won't claim that I'm watching games live. Wouldn't be the truth. So it is always, I like to see the box scores, see what's going on, then watch what happens with those prospects.
Drew, Dave is a Finnish league enthusiast. I mean, you can't get enough.
I do love the Finnish. I will say I do love the Finnish calls, though. The goal calls are usually rather entertaining.
That is true. I think we linked to one last year. I think I remember we played one on air because I don't remember which Jets. I think it was a Jets prospect scored, and the call was fairly entertaining. And I think, if I recall correctly, we played it because it was that entertaining of a call. Back in the Finnish league. Ezzy, you were going to say something. What was that?
Well, I know. I just saw. I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, maybe we can pull it up. Jay Miller said RIP Norm. And just quickly, I realized, you know, it's a hockey show, but we are sponsored by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. And you know, I know, Drew, you know this, but for those who haven't seen it, whoever, if you haven't seen, there's a little vigil outside of Rumors. Somebody, you know, put a framed picture of Norm Macdonald and a candle. And I believe, Drew, if I'm not mistaken, you know, a few candles have been added and a few, maybe another picture, I'm not sure, has been added. But just awesome. I know Norm played at Rumors. And I think, you know, most people, you know, that have seen Norm Macdonald do stand up or watched him on SNL or seen him in movies know he was one of the funniest people out there. So definitely we're going to miss him.
We are, but we're pleased to welcome to the program from the Winnipeg Jets, Dominic Toninato joins us on the show now. Dominic, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us. How are things? Looks like we're working through some technical difficulties. Dom, can you hear me?
Oh, there you go.
There you go. Good morning. How are you?
Clear, yeah.
There you go.
Got me?
We got you. You got us?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well, good. Thanks. Appreciate you joining us on this Saturday morning. How are things? Welcome back to Winnipeg, I guess. You're back in town, getting ready for the start of training camp next week.
We're slowly starting to funnel in, and we're having our little pre-camp skates with all the boys. It's good to see everyone again.
Undoubtedly. How was your summer? What was, I guess, sort of where do you spend it? Do you go back home to Minnesota? Is that where you're spending your time? And sort of what was what's your priority for the summer after what was undoubtedly a very strange year for you when you actually didn't get into very many games either at the AHL or the NHL level, given the whole taxi squad of last season?
So I spend the summer back home in Minnesota. And just train like I normally do, even though the season was a lot different last season and definitely not what I wanted. But just got to go back to work when you get home in the summer and just keep working on getting better and getting ready for the next season.
So, Dominic, obviously we want to get into the upcoming season, but, you know, we have to go back to, you know, the goal in game one against the Edmonton Oilers. Obviously, a lot of Jets fans we're super pumped up with that game, you know, tied 1-1 in the third period. Can you just take us back, you know, to that goal? Obviously, Logan Stanley, you know, with the big slap shot from the point. And I actually went back and watched, and it was about 20 seconds before it was called a goal. And I think everybody on the bench, including yourself, were super surprised. But just, you know, considering everything you went through last year, can you just take us back to, you know, that goal against the Oilers?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely an awesome feeling, and obviously a huge goal for the team. But yeah, I mean, I think it would have been a little better if we got to celebrate right away, and maybe in front of some fans. But we'll take what we can get, and we're lucky enough to get the win, so that was even better.
You know, Dominic, what's it like being in Winnipeg this year as opposed to last year? Because, you know, obviously you became familiar with guys in the organization, but yeah, last year we talked to so many people, including yourself, how unusual it was. So how nice is it to come in and feel a little more familiar with the group and have it a little different than it was the previous year?
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, the last three seasons I've been going into a new organization, so just getting familiar and meet new guys and stuff like that, it gets tough. So just coming back and already knowing the guys and knowing the system, knowing the rink, knowing the city, everything like that, just feel a lot more comfortable getting back here. And it was great to see the guys again, because it's a really special group.
You know, Dominic, you talk about that, and, you know, that leads into you signed a 2-year contract extension in the offseason. You know, how important was that for you, sort of getting that second year, knowing that you can maybe establish some level of roots here in Winnipeg with the True North organization, knowing that they want to make a longer commitment to you, and just having that sort of that feeling of being loved just that little bit more?
Yep, exactly. It makes you feel a whole lot more comfortable. I think you can kind of just go out there and play your game and do what you do instead of having to worry about that 1-year contract year and what's going to come next summer and what might happen the next summer. So it just makes you feel a lot more comfortable coming into this season, and hopefully you can play well with it.
You know, we talked about the odd last year that it was, given the COVID situation and everything, and I'm sure you'll be thrilled to never hear the words taxi squad again. Just, you know, how difficult is that for you as a professional, sort of knowing your role and trying to stay motivated and, you know, getting through another skate and another practice, knowing you're unlikely to play, either at the AHL level or the NHL level for a big chunk of time? I mean, you know, what's that like mentally for you, and how do you sort of keep your focus last year throughout the course of that uncertainty, let's say?
Yeah, I mean, it was tough. Obviously, you want to play. Everybody wants to play, and that's the main goal. But like you said, the mental aspect, I think, was definitely the hardest out of all of them. Just like I said, you want to play, and having to just practice every day, it can take a toll on you. I think sometimes we're definitely better than others, but I think for the most part, just the group of guys we had on that taxi squad helped a lot. It made it enjoyable. We had as much fun as we could with it, and it was just fun being around that group of guys. So that made it a lot better.
You know, Dominic, a few weeks ago, you know, Dave had a one-on-one chat with Nate Schmidt, and you could just, you know, feel the excitement. And he's obviously a guy that we've known for a long time as one of those great personalities, you know, in the game. And, you know, wanted to ask you, you know, are you pretty close with Nate Schmidt, just being a Minnesota guy? Like, do you know him pretty well? And in addition to, you know, how great of a defenseman he is on the ice, how great is it to have that type of personality around the organization? Because, you know, we obviously, you know, don't know him personally, but it just seems like he's one of those guys that, you know, everybody just wants to be around.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I skated with him a couple times in the summer, so I don't know him a whole lot, but I definitely know him. We've become closer over the last few skates, especially with him coming here. But yeah, he has an awesome personality. He lightens up the room. He has a lot of fun every day, and I think it's going to be great to have around the locker room and on the ice.
Dominic Toninato is our guest Saturday morning. You're watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. You know Dominic, of course, as a Winnipeg Jets forward, recently signed a 2-year contract extension to stay in Winnipeg this past offseason.
Now, Dominic, when you came back, when you finally got into some action last year, you went down, played with the Manitoba Moose, and you played on a line with Cole Perfetti, and you guys had some nice chemistry. You had 3 goals in 3 games, but really, I think it was 3 goals, and you had 2 goals in 1 of those games. So you had a pretty good chemistry with Cole Perfetti. I believe you had 3 primary assists on all your goals. So what was it like playing with him, and what can Jets fans come, you know, appreciate? Because obviously, aside from, I think, myself, nobody else was watching the Moose games, at least live. So what are the people going to be able to appreciate from a guy like Cole Perfetti?
Oh, he's just a great player. I mean, that's why he's drafted so high. He has a ton of skill. His work ethic is great. He always wants to learn. And just getting a chance to play with him, you can really see his skill shine. He's a great playmaker. He can score goals. I mean, he can pretty much do it all. So he's going to have a long NHL career.
Moving away from on the ice activities, Dominic, you mentioned you spent summer in Minnesota. So is it fishing? Is it golfing? Is it just kicking your feet up and relaxing? What does Dominic Toninato do in the off season when you're not training for the upcoming year?
Yeah, I'm not a big hunter. I do some fishing on the side, but unfortunately it was a shorter summer and was pretty busy summer. So I didn't get a lot of fishing in, but for the most part, just golf, hang with family and friends, and try and spend as much time with them as possible. And then also got married this summer. So that took up a good chunk of it.
Congratulations. How was that?
Thank you.
Good party?
It was awesome. Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It was really good.
Dominic, you have a couple of married guys here, so my only advice would be just say yes to whatever your wife says, right? Like, just I'm not even listening half the time.
I'm just
time ago. But congratulations on that. Yeah.
Exactly. Thank
you. Just getting back to you know, training camp coming up starts on I believe it's Wednesday or Thursday that main training camp starts. And, you know, we talked about last year was a little bit difficult for you just in terms of you weren't able to get into as many games. And obviously you're hoping to get into many more games this year, you know, with the Jets. Was there something that you tried to focus on in the off season in terms of training or maybe, you know, the mental part of the game, or kind of for you, you know, how is this different, this training camp, in addition to the fact that it's going to be a normal season, obviously?
I don't think I really tried to focus on one particular thing this summer. Just kind of trying to round out my game and try and get better in all aspects. But as far as training camp, I mean, I didn't even get to experience the training camp last year. So this will be my first one with the Jets. So just going to go out there and compete and battle and show them what I got and hopefully make a roster spot.
You know, and Dominic, is that something you do ahead of each season? Some guys like the goal set. Are you the kind of guy who sets a goal in mind, whether it's, like you said, achieving a roster spot, whether it's something else? Do you do that sort of thing during your summer to mentally prepare yourself and have a goal in order to try and reach during the regular season?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the main goal right off the hop is to make the team. I think you start there, and then you can set little goals throughout the season. Once you get that first goal out of the way.
Dominic Toninato, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Now, Dominic, you played your college hockey at Minnesota Duluth, same as Dylan Samberg. You know, is there any sort of friendly rivalry going on in the dressing room with?
Don't forget about Neil Pionk, Dave. Guys? Drew, don't forget
Sorry,
about
Neil Pionk, of course. Yep. Yeah, there's a lot of Minnesota guys there. So, how, you know, the friendly competition, the friendly rivalry, how does that sort of play itself out over the course of a season?
I mean, it's definitely good to have some fellow dogs here, especially when we're rooting against the other rivals that are also here. So we definitely outnumber them. It's good. It's good. We have that bond from back in college, and it's fun.
You know, I wanted to ask you about Neil Pionk because, you know, I'll save Drew here because he forgot to mention Neil. But, you know, how nice is it to you? Like, you know, you hear about, like, you know, kind of life coming full circle. You know, how nice is it, you know, having played with him for Minnesota Duluth and now, you know, you guys are living out your dreams in the NHL and playing together with the Jets?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, we played against each other growing up. And then was fortunate enough to play college with them a couple of years. And now, like you said, just full circle getting to play here. It's been awesome to watch his career grow and watching him just keep taking the next steps. And he's a heck of a player and he's a heck of a friend.
Dominic Toninato is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dominic's a forward with the Winnipeg Jets. He joins us ahead of Jets training camp, which gets underway next week at the Iceplex.
You know, Dominic, I don't know if we make too much out of this or not, but, you know, friendly Manitoba is being replaced by Minnesota Nice. And is there a joy to that in being able to play with all of these guys, like as he just listed off too, but top to bottom, you've got so many from Wheeler all the way to, you know, CJC. So there's all these guys who have Minnesota roots in the organization. Does that add something for you? And you bring in a guy like Nate Schmidt, and like you said, there's a laundry list of guys that are new here that are Minnesota born. Does that make it a little more special for you when you come here?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you just have that connection. You see a lot of them during the summer throughout skates and whatnot. So you get to know them at that point. And then just makes it comfortable for everybody coming back here. You already know some guys, and we were joking earlier. We lost a couple of the mini boys this off season, but then just reloaded with a couple. So I think it's a five person Minnesota limit minimum.
It's got to be able to fit it into one minivan. That's the rule, yeah. I think, of thumb. You know, Dom, we'll let you go on this last question. You know, obviously training camp getting underway next week. You guys are in town. You're skating now. You look at the roster and you can see that there's, you know, guys who are fighting for certain spots. And you sort of know, you know, the lay of the land entering into training camp. You know, how does that sort of motivate you as you start training camp? How did you use that as a drive to try and capitalize on one of those available roster spots on the Jets roster ahead of this season?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you're really focusing on the other guy. I mean, obviously, you know who you're competing with, but you just got to focus on yourself. I mean, you go out there and do what you can do and play your game. I mean, that's the reason we're all here is the way each of us plays our game. So not changing that up and just going out there and giving your best effort.
Dominic Toninato plays for the Winnipeg Jets. He's a forward. He's under contract for a couple of years, so be sure you'll get used to seeing him around these parts along with the rest of the Minnesota crew on the Winnipeg Jets. Dom, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate your time. Congratulations again on getting married. All the best for the upcoming season.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Take care. There he goes. Dominic Toninato joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's take another quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Dominic Toninato interview, talk about the battle for roster spots in the Jets forward group. Much more to come. We're going to be joined by John Forslund, Seattle Kraken broadcaster, in about 35 minutes time. It's Saturday morning. You're with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. We're back Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on our YouTube channel and all of our social medias. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg. As he'd answer your question, the tribute to Norm Macdonald outside of rumors has grown, according to Instagram, to 3 candles, 2 bouquets of flowers, and in a very appropriate deck of playing cards for a guy who enjoyed playing some cards every now and then. So
I don't know about you. I don't know about you guys, but I have spent a lot of time watching old, you know, Norm Macdonald SNL and stand-up comedy. I got to see him at the Burt. I think that was, I want to say 2014, 2015. He was rocking that Jets hoodie. If you guys remember, he was at the Jets game, rocking that Jets hoodie. Just one of the highlights for me. I mean, Drew, you know how much I love stand-up, and you know he's one of the all-time greats. So
he certainly is, and a lot of people were, going through their memories, going through their emotions when it was announced that he passed away earlier this week from cancer at the young age of 61. So certainly far too young, but we do have his great comedy that will stay with us for the coming generations and so forth. Big thanks to Dominic Toninato for joining us.
Awesome interview.
Insightful interview. You know, this is a guy who clearly can see the opportunity that's in front of him in Winnipeg. And, you know, I don't think that we can sort of overemphasize just how difficult last year must have been for him. Playing a grand total of, I believe the number was 6 regular season games between the AHL and the NHL level, and then coming in and getting that game-winning goal in game one in Edmonton, you know, really, you know, just, you know, smart play, put a stick on a shot and have it go in. But just how difficult it must be to stay motivated last season. And, you know, he alluded to that about how difficult a year it was. And I'm sure that he's looking at the opportunity in front of him and the fact that, you know, the fourth line has a lot of question marks on it. There's even a role potentially on the third line. And he knows that this is a very important training camp for him, you know, in trying to solidify his role with the Winnipeg Jets. It is worth noting, of course, he is on a 2-way contract for the first year of that 2-year deal that he signed with the Jets. So he could go down to the AHL and play for the Moose without having to, you know, he's got a little more flexibility in his contract than a lot of other players.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance, guys, that you're going to see Dominic Toninato, you know, as one of the Jets, you know, top 12 forwards, or at the very least, you know, maybe he's the quote unquote 13th forward, but you know, he's a high energy player. And to Drew's point, the fact that he only played, you know, 6 regular season games between the Jets and the Moose, and then he comes in and he scores the game winning goal. I mean, it shows you a lot about his character, right? And I know that, you know, the guys in the dressing room, they really like, you know, the type of personality and the type of hard-working, honest effort, you know, that he gives every time he's on the ice. So he's a very valuable player. And as I mentioned, I mean, we don't know exactly what that fourth line is going to look like because it's going to be completely new. But, you know, I think there's a good chance that you're going to see some combination of, you know, Riley Nash, Dominic Toninato, Jansen Harkins, and then obviously, you know, David Gustafson is a candidate to be on that fourth line. Maybe David Gustafson is going to be, you know, the winger on that third line because he can play the wing, right? But Toninato is absolutely one of those guys, you know, that's going to be a valuable, you know, depth piece for the Jets.
Yeah. I mean, Dave, you look at this Jets roster entering training camp, and there certainly are more questions, I would say, up front, more question marks, at least up front, than there are in the back end. Really, the entire fourth line, the composition of who's going to be playing on that, you know, right side, presumably of Kopp and Lowry on that third line, and who's going to be playing on the left side of the, you know, with you know, Dubois and Ehlers or however it's going to look. We know Stasny is obviously going to fill one of those roles, if either the second line role or the third line role, but there's a lot of question marks around this Winnipeg Jets forward group. Not, and But I think the difference is these aren't question marks where the answer is not on the roster. The answer is likely on the roster, and they're not going to be trying to pound a square peg into a round hole like we've seen so many teams do for so many different times. That's why I think there's the optimism around the Jets that we've talked about so far this morning and we've seen talked about really throughout the community this offseason.
Yeah, exactly, Drew. And I think that the beauty of that is you want to see these young guys pushing for opportunities. And there are some, you know, overagers, if you want, like a guy like Dominic Caldonado, not exactly an old guy, but that idea of a guy like him who's going to push for a roster spot. A Riley Nash, an experienced guy who, you know, everyone thought he was a solid addition. You're not getting any offense with him, but you don't really lose any defense. He's a very solid defensive center for Columbus, and then obviously was traded to Toronto. I think played two games for the Leafs, but
yeah,
the point
Don't
is
worry, that he's the Leafs didn't play them anymore.
so that look, the reality is that you have some guys who are going to push, but then Christian Vesalainen, I think Mike McIntyre wrote about it in today's Free Press, which is in the morning papers, about the opportunity that's in front of the 2017 first rounder for Winnipeg. That idea of that here's your opportunity. You know, you started to see it last year. Maurice spoke fairly glowingly about Christian Vesalainen, about the opportunity in front of him. So are you going to be able to come up, become a third line staple, maybe work your way in, get some second power play time? He's got a good shot. It doesn't take it a lot, but I think he probably needs to use his shot a little bit more than he does. I personally like I said, I remember one, I don't know if it was a preseason game, but him and Line A were on, lining up at the circles and just blasting one-timers. He's got a decent shot. So, you know, we'll see maybe, you know, with the expectation that there's an opportunity for him, maybe he seizes that opportunity that is in front of him. And a guy like David Gustin, who I've been with the hammer for quite some time, because here's a guy who is ready. I mean, there's nothing left for him to accomplish at the AHL. Now, if he plays at the AHL, is it better than him sitting in the press box? Yes, absolutely. And it'll benefit him. But I just think that he can do now what Paul Maurice needs a, quote, young player to be able to do, which is to play in more than one role. If you want him to play PK, I think he could be trusted with that. Now, he'll have had some things. Pascal Vincent, former Moose coach, talked about what David Gustin needed to work on over the course of the summer. So if he was able to do that successfully, here's a guy who can maybe go in, play some PK for you. It's obviously not going to be a power play guy for you, but maybe he plays a little PK. And is he going to be more effective than Nate Thompson? I would think he is going to be. So to me, here's an opportunity for a guy that you've developed in your AHL system. Now give him an opportunity. Again, it's just an opportunity to seize that role. We'll see if he's able to do it. That's the beauty of training camp, though, Drew, and as is that these guys are given an opportunity. There are open spots, like I said, with the expansion draft, with Mason Appleton leaving, and the fourth line essentially gone. Mm-hmm. So there you go. There's your opportunity. And Cole Perfetti, who we haven't even talked about,
He's
coming to camp, and we know he's either going to be playing with the Jets or the Moose. That's the luxury of this AHL exemption that'll allow a guy like Cole Perfetti, who had nothing left to gain at the junior level, and according to Craig Button, when we had him on last season, could probably only develop bad habits because he's played with men, because he's adjusted his game to the pro level for so long. This way, at least, a guy like Cole Perfetti, who has that flexibility, maybe a guy who, hey, maybe he blows it up in training camp. Maybe he looks fantastic. Maybe he's, instead of playing center, maybe he's playing on the wing. So there's a lot of different opportunities here, and I think there's a lot of reason for excitement for Winnipeg Jets fans.
Do you think Craig misses us? We haven't seen him. You know, for a while there, he was on every second show. You think he misses us? We haven't seen him in a couple months. Maybe we have to
check
in.
I can text him, Drew.
Yeah, you know, maybe check in and see how Craig's doing, how his off season was. You know, Dave, you mentioned Christian Vesalainen, and I wanted to bring this up because, you know, you're right. There's our buddy Mike McIntyre wrote about him in today's Winnipeg Free Press. The link is on illegalcurve.com in the morning papers. To me, I look at Vesalainen, and everyone's saying Vesalainen, you know, for that third line role next to Kopp and Lowry.
Mm-hmm.
I take a step back. Why isn't Vesalainen better suited playing on, let's say, a second line role with Dubois and Ehlers, and move Stastny to that third line role, with Kopp and Lowry? Doesn't that sort of balance out the skill sets and make more sense, sort of skill set wise, a little more, because to me, Vesalainen in that not a checking role and not strictly a grinding role, but it seems like a line of Kopp, Lowry, and Stastny should be exceptional. And I'd like to see what a line of Dubois, Ehlers, for argument's sake, let's say they're playing together, and Vesalainen could do as a scoring line together. I wonder if we might see that at some point in time during this preseason.
Yeah, or the regular season. And, well, and sure. You know, I think it's a good point that you make, right? Because, I mean, first off, we don't know if Pierre-Luc Dubois is going to start the season at center, right? I think we're expecting
Doesn't
him
he
to
have
play.
To?
Well, I mean, I don't think he has to, Drew, because you could have said that last year too, right? Like, I mean, after, you know, he was back for a handful of games after his quarantine, you'd say, okay, you know, let's go back to the natural position here. So
well,
I think,
let me,
you know,
hang on, let me stop you for 1 second, Ezzy. Sorry. You know, because Vest, you know, it sort of segues into what Dubois was saying in that 31 Thoughts podcast interview, which, you know, he said that, you know, there's some games where you just don't necessarily have it. You know, the puck's bouncing on you, and he was always able to rely on his physical conditioning, and his physical conditioning was always better than his opponent. He's a real workout fiend, and what he said in that interview, because of COVID, because of the various quarantines, because of all the different things last year, he wasn't able to get his physical conditioning to the level where he wanted it. Whereas this year, he's saying it's back to normal. I just wanted to bring that in as sort of some additional context to some of Dubois' struggles maybe last year, in addition to the injuries and the quarantines and the start and stop nature of the season that he had.
Yeah, no, fair enough. But, you know, you originally were asking, Drew, about, you know, whether Paul Stastny might be on the third line and Christian Vesalainen might be on the second line. And the reason why I brought up, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois and Paul Stastny and them, you know, potentially playing both center and wing is because that would depend on Vesalainen playing on the second line would depend a lot on how Stastny and Dubois are used. I think there's a good chance that you're going to see Nikolaj Ehlers, you know, play some top minutes on Scheifele's line, right? And I think that's another, you know, question is Blake Wheeler, you know, is he better suited for, you know, the second line? With, I don't know, maybe you would see a second line of, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois with Blake Wheeler and maybe Paul Stastny on the other wing. But I think your point is, like, how do you maximize Christian Vesalainen? And, you know, I've thought about it throughout the summer. And I you know what, I'm not as opposed to Christian Vesalainen playing on the third line. Let's be honest, guys. You know, Dave mentioned it. This is a first-round pick from back in 2017. Vesalainen is playing in the NHL this year. I mean, I don't know that with, you know, 100% certainty, but I would be pretty shocked if he isn't, you know, on the opening right night roster and playing the majority of the season in the NHL. I just think at this point in his career, you know, he's 22 years old. He's not 18 years old anymore. He's got to play, you know, big minutes. You got to see what you have here in Vesalainen and where is he best suited. So yeah, Drew, could he, you know, would he be better suited to maybe play, you know, with more of a playmaker, with more of an offensive talented player? Yes. But I would say this, guys, you know, I wouldn't get too fixated on third line checking role because, yes, that is your quote-unquote shutdown line, but you also want to score. And let's be honest here, Adam Lowry and Andrew Kopp, they can score. I mean, Adam Lowry's not going to score 40 goals this year, but he's a guy that can score, and especially Andrew Kopp coming off of his, you know, career year, you know, considering, you know, the points per game and everything like that. I think that, you know, Vesalainen could flourish and he could play like more of a kind of two-way game, physical game, but also contribute. And I think, you know, Dave wasn't being, you know, assertive enough there. He doesn't just have a decent shot. Vesalainen's got a great shot. I mean, you know that, Dave. He's a guy that, you know, can score. Hasn't done it at the NHL level yet, but he's certainly done it at the other levels that he's played. So yeah, Vesalainen, you know, could it hurt him offensively a little bit to be playing on the third line? Yes. You also have to think about, like, you know, Paul Maurice has a master plan and his lines are going to change. We know that the blender is going to be out probably as early as, you know, game one or even in the preseason. But I think, you know, you shouldn't focus too much on, you know, which line Vesalainen is on during training camp or on the opening night roster. I think it's up to the coaching staff and Vesalainen himself to find, you know, what line, what role is best for him. But it's certainly, in addition to Pierre-Luc Dubois, who's coming off of a down year, there's probably no other player on the Jets who has more to prove than Vesalainen.
I think you're probably right. I mean, he's, you know, to your point, you said, you know, the Jets need to know what they have in him. And they've been patient. It's been 4 years since he was drafted, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. And Mike wrote about it in today's Free Press, sort of looking at all the other players who were drafted in 2017, Dave, and who've made an impact. But this is certainly, look, there's opportunity for the taking for the Winnipeg Jets this year among the forward group in a prominent role. And I think the whole organization wants Veselainen to grab that, you know, grab that opportunity and run with it.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about it. They've been grooming him for a bigger role. And to Ezzie's point, I mean, the beauty of training camp is that he's gonna have an opportunity. I mean, if Paul Maurice sees something in him that says maybe he should be given a chance on the second line on a wing role, and maybe to your point, Drew, you know, you drop a Stasny down to make a more balanced third line. And I know that some people are saying, well, maybe you wouldn't have a distributor there because Pierre-Luc Dubois may not be that. But, you know, who knows? Maybe Blake Wheeler is on that second pairing. Maybe the second line, sorry. You've got, you know, Ehlers up with Scheifele and Connor. You've got Wheeler with PLD and Christian Veselainen or Cole Perfetti. You know, there's so many different variations that we can discuss. But I think what it comes down to is a lot of times, look, if you're Dylan Sandberg, if you're Ville Heinola, if you're Johnny Kovacevic, I mean, the reality is that you know where you're going to be playing for the most part. With Ville Heinola, like I said, there's a little bit of wiggle room in my mind for him in that Logan Stanley spot. But for the other guys, they know that they're heading to the Moose. You know, with Christian Veselainen, this opportunity is in front of him. He can seize that opportunity. Sometimes it's harder when you're a young player. And every one of these guys wants the opportunity. Every one of these guys wants to play in the NHL. They appreciate playing in the AHL. They don't malign playing in the AHL, but they want to be in the NHL. But now here's the place for Christian Veselainen to say, look, Mason Appleton is gone. He's not coming back. This is what he was able to bring to the roster. Can I do something like that? Can I do something more? Can I earn that, you know, scoring winger role on the second line? And I saw some of the comments from, I don't remember who specifically, but was talking about the idea of rolling and having a deeper team that's not just the traditional first line scoring, second line scoring, third line checking, what the hell's the fourth line doing? But, you know, to me, if you can actually have a top nine, again, we got to get away from the mentality of a top six. If you can have a top nine that is evenly distributing time, opportunity, goal scoring, that is your ideal. And with this Jets team, in whatever permutation we're talking about, really, there's opportunity for guys like a Veselainen, like a Perfetti, like a Harkins, like a Toninato to get in there and provide another level of offense that this Jets team is going to need, because we saw Mason Appleton start to do it, right? He was having a career year with the Jets and with the opportunities he was given. So that opportunity is gone. A guy like Riley Nash isn't coming in and providing you with that scoring opportunity. Watch, he'll score 5 goals, you know, in the first 10 games. But the point is, that's not what you're anticipating. You're anticipating a guy like Christian Veselainen or a guy like Cole Perfetti, these young, I mean, I'm not putting it on Perfetti, but if he seizes the opportunity, you're not going to say no to it, right? If he's able to take that door that's open and slam it shut because he's got that, the Jets aren't going to like cry. The Jets aren't going to be upset about that. But the truth is, for Christian Veselainen, who we're trying to keep it focused on right now, there won't be a better opportunity for him than right now this year to be like, there's an open spot, whether it's second line, third line, I can take that, I can seize it, and it's on him. I don't know what his summer was like in Finland. I haven't seen him yet live, so it'll be interesting to see. But there's plenty of chance, plenty of opportunity, and it's on the player. If he can take it, if he can do what Logan Stanley did.
Yeah.
Nobody saw. I saw Logan Stanley every game for the Moose. I never anticipated what he was going to do. Now, we had a longer layoff, obviously, than traditional between, you know, the previous 2019-20 and 2021. But similar to what Logan Stanley did, there's an opportunity for Christian Veselainen and kind of take some people by surprise and say, listen, I've got a skill set that this team could use. I'm going to provide some offense, but be responsible. And again, with the way the defense is composed, there's going to be a little more opportunity, I think, for offense with these forwards.
And just to throw Dave under the bus here, 4 years ago, Riley Nash had 15 goals for the Bruins. So Yes, I don't think they're expecting necessarily 15 goals
from Ryan Lindgash,
but he's not a slouch.
He's not going to contribute offense. I far be it for me to have to jump to Dave's defense here, but Riley Nash, when the Jets signed him, everyone said, look, it's a good signing because basically nothing happens when he's on the ice. That's been his reputation for the last number of years. Nothing good or nothing bad happens when he's on the ice. He's that defensively responsible. And if that's what the Jets want out of a fourth line, a guy that they can play, 10 minutes a game where those 10 minutes you're going to play to a draw, well, that's not so bad. To expect Riley Nash to get more than, he's not going to get any offense to speak of, despite what he may have done
ago. I disagree, though. It's one thing to say he's not going to provide a lot of offense, but to say that he's not going to provide any offense, I'm just saying, give him a little bit more credit. That's all I'm saying. 15 goals wasn't 10 years ago. That was 4 years ago. And he was a point of game player for Cornell. That's all I'm saying. He can provide some offense.
Okay. He did get 15 goals.
Shouldn't Ezzy be saving this for our over-under segment in about 3 weeks' time?
But you know what he'll do? We'll do the over-under segment. He'll go under. He can cover both sides of the argument.
You know what, Dave? I'm just saying, I'm not the public defender for Riley Nash. All I'm saying is, we like Nate Thompson, but I actually think that Riley Nash he'll provide more offense. There's no doubt about that than Nate Thompson was, if you want to go apples for apples, right?
Well, no, I think Riley Nash is a better player than Nate Thompson. I like that as a sign. Yeah, I agree with you in that front. But to expect Riley Nash to all of a sudden be somehow resume being a double digit goal scorer, to me would be, the Jets would love it. But I would also say it's probably more of a fallacy than it is a realistic expectation. But as he proved me wrong, you can throw my words back at me when the season's over, if it comes to fruition.
Nash is a really good player. He's a really,
we're agreeing on that.
Yeah. I think we all agree with that.
We're agreeing that he was a very astute signing by the Winnipeg Jets, I think, in that they filled out a fourth line role with a guy who was perfectly suited for a fourth line role on most teams in the NHL. They're not a guy who's necessarily hanging on for dear life and you're holding your breath when he's on the ice. I think Riley Nash will be a beneficial contributor to the Winnipeg Jets, not so much offensively, is my point in that. I want to circle back to the previous conversation, though, and we're sort of assuming that Lowry and Kopp are going to be together. That's sort of been the tenor without necessarily being explicitly said.
They'll be together.
Why? Well, are you sure? Why for not Kopp?
Puff Daddy and Maestro.
Okay. Why not Kopp for that second line role then? Why can't, given the year that Andrew Kopp had last year, given that...
Because you don't want to pay him.
Well, somebody's going to pay him this offseason regardless. And that's not the Jets. The Jets will be glad to pay him if he goes and he puts up, the 50 points or so that he was on pace for if it had been an 82-game season last year. So why not Andrew Kopp to fill that second-line role that we think is a question mark? I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility.
No, it's not. It's nobody's going to say it's out of the realm of possibility. It's just who is best suited to then, take that role on the third line? Because I think it goes back to the familiarity that Paul Maurice has with that line. It's been 4 years now, 5 years now, that's been a pair. So that's not to say that Andrew Kopp, doesn't have the ability to play on the second line. We've seen him play on the second line, but does that then mean that, maybe a Paul Stastny or a Pierre-Luc Dubois, depending on who's playing wing, are they bumped down to the third line, right? That's, I guess, the question, because we know there are two guys for sure, that are not getting bumped out of the top six. And that's Nick Ehlers and Kyle Connor, right? That's not happening. And I would throw in Blake Wheeler in there. So, do you see any one of those three guys being a third liner? Probably not. So then the Paul Stastny would really be the only one. And again, we're getting way ahead of ourselves, guys, because we don't, not only do we not know what the lines are going to be in training camp, we don't know what the lines are going to be on the first night of the regular season or on the second night. You know that Mark Scheifele is going to be your first line center, not on opening night because he's still going to be serving a suspension. But you know what I mean, right? And yeah. Paul Stastny and Pierre-Luc Dubois, again, we had Marat on in late July for a free agency show, And he was saying that, you know, he believes that Stastny will start the season on at center, and then Dubois will probably start the season on the wing and then move to center. And again, Drew, I know, I see you're shaking your head, but it doesn't matter, Drew, what happens at the beginning of the season. The point is, I believe, and I think most people believe, Pierre-Luc Dubois will be up the middle for the majority of the season. So it could happen that he plays opening night up the middle and he stays there. But the point is that Paul Stastny is the one guy that I think, you know, he has the ability to move from side to side, wing to center, third line to second line to first line. He's the one guy. So to answer your question in a roundabout way, yeah, I mean, there's no, you know, debate here. Kopp is a great player. He could play on the second line. It's really Paul Maurice and the coaching staff that decides, are you going to keep him on that third line because of how dependable he is? Or are you going to give him more of an opportunity? But that's going to be, you know, at the expense of another player. But again, I wouldn't get too fixated on second or third line. You know, well, the Jets have a great top nine, and that's what should be the focus. The top nine is, you know, just as good as any other team in the league.
Well, let's talk about Pierre-Luc Dubois. And you mentioned what Murat said back in July. And, you know, I do encourage everyone to go listen to what Dubois said with Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick. I thought it was quite interesting. Dave, how important, from your perspective, how important is it? You can hear that on illegalcurve.com, undoubtedly. So you can go check it out there. You know, from your perspective, Dave, you listened to the interview, and Dubois talks about it's not that it was a disaster of a year, but it's just a year where you can never get comfortable, and you can never get into a routine, and you can never get sort of feel as though you're a regular contributor to the team.
Can we blame John Tortorella for everything, please?
No, we can't, but you can certainly, I mean, you know, he took the high road in the interview Dubois did in talking about the relationship and why it went so sour in Columbus. And he said, you know, he said, and I thought it was interesting that he really had to bite his tongue at different times where all the people were trashing him, and people who don't know him and don't know the story were speculating wildly. And he thought that, you know, he wanted to sort of not let sleeping dogs lie, but he did, you know, his agent, you know, recommended that he not pour any more fire on things. And I thought that was an interesting, you know, discussion and interesting perspective that he shared. But if you're Dubois, I think the Jets have to almost a big part of training camp, and not to gift him anything, but is to get him comfortable and get him in a role that he feels he's going to be best suited for. So with all due respect to Murat and his opinion, and he's certainly very well, very knowledgeable and a great friend of the show, the idea of starting Dubois on the wing this season and then moving him to center doesn't sit well with me. I think you need to establish what his position is going to be so that he can then continue to build into that position. And frankly, strictly based on talent at this stage in their career, I believe Dubois is better suited for that second line center role than Paul Stastny is, Dave.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about it. I think that last year was an off year. Guys are allowed to have off years. It's not, you know, you don't send them to the moon.
Drew had an off year last year. So
absolutely, 100%.
You brought me back, and I'm very thankful for it.
And we're hoping that you're going to bounce back. Yeah. So the reality is that you don't fire a guy off to the KHL or the AHL for the rest of their careers because they have, especially last year. And I'm not making excuses for the guy. We're, you know, I'm just saying that there are always extenuating circumstances for these situations, and we tend to see things in black and white, and there's always going to be something a little gray in the middle that people have to sometimes understand. There's other things other than hockey in their lives, even though they're professional athletes, and even though the expectation is they're giving 100% of their focus to their craft. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I'm with you, Drew. I think there's no question in my mind, at least, that Pierre-Luc Dubois has to be your center, has to be your second line center. That's why you brought him in. You didn't trade Patrick Laine, the winger, for Pierre-Luc Dubois, the winger. You traded him to give yourself a Mark Scheifele, Pierre-Luc Dubois, Adam Lowry, 1-2-3 punch, which is as good a 1-2-3 punch, in theory, as any in the league. So the truth is, Pierre-Luc Dubois, as you said, talked about, and I am with you, I encourage people to go to illegalcurve.com and listen. Mark Scheifele was on the 32 Thought podcast as well. Oh, Ronnie. Come on, Ronnie. It's not true.
Ronnie's my number one advocate. If there's
that is true. I'm convinced Ronnie is your pseudonym, actually. But although I've met Ronnie in person, so I know he actually exists. But just for people who are listening to the podcast, Ronnie just said, Drew has never had an off year. Drew is the man. But I'm not sure I agree. Do you agree with that?
They have to be related. Ronnie has to be a cousin of yours.
No, honestly.
Or you're paying him or something.
Ronnie just knows talent when he sees it and when he hears it.
Anyways, the point though that
I'm just jealous. I want Ronnie's love.
look, guys, Pierre-Luc Dubois sounds like he's had a very good summer of training. And I think that is the key. And we talked about it at the end of the season. We said this is going to be all about he's the biggest question mark for this Jets team. Because again, you don't trade a guy like Patrick Laine who can score the way he does for a guy to put Pierre-Luc Dubois on the wing. It's not achieving anything. I'm not saying he has to be there forever, but I'm just saying it's not ideal for the Jets. So again, quickly, because I know John Forslund's coming up, but I'll just say that I would anticipate a bounce back here from the Jets' second line center.
And with that, we're pleased to welcome to the program John Forslund. John is a good friend of ours. You know him, of course, as the Seattle Kraken premier debut broadcaster after so many years with the Carolina Hurricanes. John, good morning. Thanks for joining us. How are things in the Emerald City?
Yeah, the Emerald City is great, guys. Good to see you all. And thanks for that buildup. That makes it special in this Saturday morning. That's good.
Well, we appreciate you waking up bright and early with us, and you're rocking the Kraken polo shirt. So it's nice to see things are going well with you so far. I guess, just on a personal note, a big transition for you. You're going from the southeastern United States. You're going to the Pacific Northwest. How has the transition been from the Raleigh-Durham, the Golden Triangle, to the Seattle area?
Yeah, I'm the king of culture shock, right? I went from... over 25, well, I guess it's 25 years ago, just about, I went from Hartford, Connecticut to Raleigh, and that was, trust me, that was a big change. And now after all that time to come out here, a welcome change, an energizing change, it's a beautiful area. It's going to be not an easy transition on a personal front the first year because my youngest daughter is a senior in high school and we're going to let her complete her studies in North Carolina. So the family's kind of split up a little bit, but that's the price we all have to pay for this wonderful opportunity. And at this stage of my career, I'm blessed. I get a chance to do this for the second time and it's incredible.
Well, John, there, John. Yeah, I was going to say, do they have Bojangles in Seattle?
Yeah, that's I muted that. There's somebody's at my door 2,500 miles away, so I can't answer it.
And John, you're not going to be much help there right now. No. Go ahead. Yeah,
wanted to say, you mentioned the Hartford Whalers, so you can't see it now, but I'm rocking the Violent Gentleman Hartford Whalers, and then Dave Manuk also has a Hartford Whalers shirt on. So we did that
coincidentally.
Yeah, we did that specifically for you, John, because obviously that's one of the most iconic logos of all time. And every time I see that Whalers logo, I absolutely love it. So but before we kind of get into the roster and training camp coming up, next week, you're in Seattle as Drew mentioned. Just what's it like there right now leading up to, the start of the 21-22 season? Because it feels like it's been, 5 years that we've been waiting for, it was 5 years, it felt like since, we were waiting for the expansion draft. But, what is the excitement like in the Seattle area? I imagine it's, beyond excited for, the debut season for the Kraken.
Honestly, fellas, I've never seen anything like this. Obviously, I've never been with an expansion team, right, and go through some of the buildup. But I was out here for the very first time in July for the two drafts. Remember, because of the pandemic, everything that happened, interview process, phone conversations, everything was virtual. My chats with Todd Lewicki, the CEO, one of the co-owners, Jerry Bruckheimer, everything was done virtually. So coming out here was different that way. But since I've been here, you can only imagine, if you can imagine the excitement going into a Stanley Cup playoff in a specific market like your market, that's what it's like right now. And some of these people have no idea what they're about to get themselves into because some of them are neophytes when it comes to hockey and others are not. This is an area, as you know, that's had major junior hockey for a long time. They have a history of professional hockey here and NHL hockey at one point, way back when. But I think they've been wanting another winter sports option here since the Supersonics left. This group has come in and they've put up what will be an iconic building. I'm not stretching this one either. I think Climate Pledge Arena will be the best building, bar none, maybe in the world. I have never seen a building with the amenities that this one will offer. You know, the team will have to give them a reason to be, you know, exciting, and give them a reason for the fans to build an identity and make it a tough place for the opponents to play. But they put up the building cost $1 billion to erect. The practice facilities, $80 million. It's fantastic with three sheets of ice. So, you know, it's everywhere you go, there's cracking merchandise, because I think you guys will agree. They hit a home run with the color scheme, the name. Some people don't like the name. By and large, people really like the name. I do. And the colors are striking. So there's this mystique. There's time. There's been a pandemic where this team has taken advantage of the social media world and done a good job with it, getting their messages out. So all of that leads into an explosion when training camp opens up. So it'll be a treat.
Well, John, speaking of training camp, you know, before the Seattle Kraken were just a theory, they weren't a team, but now they've got some players on that roster. So how do you think the roster is setting itself up for the upcoming season?
Well, I like what they did. I mean, if I were to build a team, you have to go by somewhat of the blueprint that was previously before you, just, you know, 4 years ago with Vegas. And obviously they hit a home run with Marc-Andre Fleury, right? So you address, if you can, this most central position on the ice, you know, who's going to stop the puck. And I think Ron identified Chris Drieger right away as a kid who has really gone through a lot in his career to get in a position to push for one job. And then, you know, by drafting him and Vitek Vanacek, they really look like we're going to come out of the gates with two young goalies that had something to prove, not proven, but at least the prospect and the ceiling was very high at that position. But when Philip Grubauer became available and he's a free agent and he decided to sign in Seattle, wow, that really is something. So, you get a Vezina candidate off an elite team, you put him in goal with Drieger, you've got a great 1-2 punch. I think that's smart. The defense, I would say the defense is very sound. Tremendous leadership back there with Mark Giordano and Oleksiak and Adam Larson. They're going to be physical. They're going to be tough to play against. Vince Dunn will get an opportunity to jump in and maybe take a leap with his offensive game and be a true leader of a power play unit, at least no question, one of the two, but maybe the A unit. And he never seemed to really take that to another level with St. Louis, and hopefully he's going to be able to do it here for this team. You know, and then you round it out with about five guys that are going to go for the 5 and 6 slots. They're all good young defensemen, and the leader of that group is Carson Soucy, who took a major step with Minnesota. So my point here is defensively, they're solid. That's your foundation. Now, as you guys know, you're never going to get elite scoring in expansion draft. So your number one center is not going to be available. Your number one wingers aren't going to be available. But you have to put together a group of 12 to 13 forwards that will give you a chance to have scoring balance. And to be fair, I think they do. And when Yanni Gourde comes off injury and joins the group at center, he'll fill out an area that can probably be looked at as a weakness. I don't think they have premier center ice play. They have solid center ice play. But without Gourde, they're asking like a Morgan Geeky to take a big step from Carolina and be a three center. You know, he could, but I think for argument's sake here at the outset of camp, you would say that's a stretch. The rest of the forwards have great character. And again, they're all going to get a chance to make a jump, whether it be Tanev or McCann or Appleton or all these guys. Eberle's a scorer and he'll fit in nicely. But, and Jaden Schwartz. But so I think they have the makings of a team in this division that can be very competitive. And I think that's all you want. I think they're legit for a challenging opportunity for the playoffs. And that's what I'm telling people. Of course, everybody wants you to win the cup because Vegas competed for the cup in the first year. And this is supposed to be a failure if they don't win the cup.
Well, I was gonna ask about that, John. John Forslund, Seattle Kraken broadcaster, is our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel. We're live on all of our social media platforms. That outrageous success that Vegas had, is that applying more pressure? Is that changing the dynamic as Seattle approaches things in their first inaugural season? Or do most people sort of acknowledge that that was just a bizarre confluence of circumstances that led Vegas to the Stanley Cup final in their first year?
Well, it's a great question. It could be a bizarre circumstance, but when it's a fact, there's nothing bizarre about it, right? So it's a fact. They went to the Stanley Cup final. It's a fact that, you know, above Ron Francis from the ownership level, there's probably some, you know, a little internal push. Hey, are we going to be as good as Vegas? I wouldn't be shocked if he's feeling a little bit of that. He knows that. But he also has to recognize that, you know, I'm going to answer this in a two-pronged way. Number one, when I look at the initial group, the initial roster Vegas put on the ice for opening night in their existence, and I look at what's here, for argument's sake, to me it looks like there are better names and potential with the Seattle group. Now, if you recall, Vegas became this magical story. I'm not sure anybody thought when the playoffs began that season they would end up in the final. They utilized five goaltenders in their first year. Fleury had his injury issues, but obviously really came back in a huge way, ready for the playoffs, and was a big key there. But the one thing that might be common is the fact that you have energy and momentum in the second half of the year. Once Vegas became relevant and they started to win, and I believe they had two major winning streaks that season, the fans came into play, and all of a sudden T-Mobile Arena went from this a place that it was going to be like a spectacle. It turned into a hard place to go if you were the opponent, not just, hey, we're going to Vegas, we're going to have a good time, we're going to get 2 points, and we're going to get out of town, and many of our fans will travel there and see us play. It became more about the Golden Knights. The same thing will happen here. Not many people in the winter are traveling to Seattle, but this team will have a tremendous home ice advantage based on the Seahawks identity. I think you're going to see that kind of parlay over to hockey. But Ronnie, on the second front here, had to look at a long range plan. And I just had dinner with him the other night, and I think he understands everything you just said. There's always pressure, but he has his eye on as much year one as year five. And to be fair with Vegas, you look at they have a great team, and they should win this division. There's no doubt about it, and they should be in position to challenge for a Stanley Cup. But those players are going to age out soon. Not right away, but they're an older group. And if you start mortgaging future, what does Vegas look like in year number eight of their existence? You don't want to take a big dip and start cycling out like the Ducks and the Kings and other teams who have been winners, and then they have to cycle out. So that's the trick. That's the plan for him. We'll see where it goes.
And John, just continuing with, you know, that idea of that long-term plan, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now, you know, earlier this week, the Kraken announced that on their logo, instead of having, you know, the traditional, you know, sponsor, it's going to say the Climate Pledge. And we should mention, you know, Amazon is the naming rights partner. So I guess they could have, you know, gone with the traditional Amazon. But I think you'd agree that's very significant when you decide to put that. And you know, on the website, you know, it mentioned, you know, that this is a global, you know, call to action for corporations, businesses, and organizations to take collective action for a safer and healthier planet. But not just that, but some of the hires that have made, you know, Cammy Granato as a female pro scout, yeah. Everett Fitzhugh as the first black radio play-by-play broadcaster. Yeah. Like, can you just talk a little bit about, you know, it just seems Seattle, I just love what they're doing with some of these hires and some of these initiatives. It just seems like they have started off the franchise right in doing things a little bit differently than other NHL teams.
Yeah, and don't forget my partner, JT Brown, right? He's going to do a...
Absolutely.
He's brand new, yeah. He's brand new, but he's going to be great at this. He really is. He'll earn his stripes along the way, and I have to keep him honest, but he's going to do a bang up job for us on that front. So when you look at this, you know, I hashtag on most of my tweets regarding the team with that's Kraken hockey, you know, a takeoff of the that's hockey thing that I use occasionally. So what I mean by that is that's Kraken hockey stands for a great deal more than just whatever the team does. This team has been very conscious about the hires. As you say, you look at the analytic department, the scouting department, the front office. You look at the fact that this will be the very first carbon zero building in the world. When you walk into Climate Pledge Arena, you know, you have the iconic shed roof from the 1962 World's Fair that's on top of the building. That's the only remaining piece from the old building. They lifted the roof. It added millions onto that billion-dollar price tag for the construction of this facility. Then they built down and created this fabulous arena. But when you walk in, it's you're basically at the top of the rink. So you're going to have to take these major escalators down to get to the various levels of the arena. And as you do, there will be LED murals all over the place with the Climate Pledge. And fans will recognize the commitment that's being made there. It's big. It's a step, because when you take steps like this, you know, people will look at it and people have a different viewpoint too. So you kind of, you're being a leader when you do things. Leaders don't sit in the back and don't have an opinion. Leaders have an opinion, and we can all disagree with an opinion. This is what's wrong with the world today. You can disagree with something, but we can still be friends. But as far as this team is concerned, they have a strong mission statement in all areas. And that's very important, because this will reach the community. And I think the Seattle Kraken will end up being leaders in the NHL this way. And they already are. And I think they will have a global reach too. And I know there's so many people in Canada that are just intrigued by all of this. I know going through the Stanley Cup playoffs at the end, when I got to Montreal, everybody wanted to talk to me about the Kraken. So there's a newness, but I think your point's well taken. It's not only being just a new team. This is a new team that's already done some things that make it very interesting. And that will carry you, because, you know, this is a Seattle's community-based, Winnipeg's community-based. And I mean, you have to take your athletes and make sure they're part of the fabric, especially if you're a new team. You know, the Mariners, the Seahawks, the Sounders, the Storm, they're all here. They all have a footprint. So way different than Raleigh, where we went there with the only pro team. You had some college and some NASCAR competition, but basically it was virgin territory. This is a major market where you have to earn your spot, and that's how they're going to go about it.
John Forslund, Seattle Kraken play-by-play broadcaster, is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
No, John, we talked, asked you about the roster. You have, the team hasn't even finished, you know, how they're going to look on game one of the regular season. So it's a hard question to ask, but because, like I said, they haven't yet iced that. But is there already some excitement about having a close proximity rival in the Vancouver Canucks? Because here in Winnipeg, obviously there's not a lot of close proximity teams, but the Minnesota Wild, obviously through some playoffs, have created that rivalry. Is in Seattle, are they kind of squaring on the Vancouver Canucks, or is it the California teams that they're seeing as maybe setting up a potential fun rivalry in the future?
Yeah, the most I hear about is Vancouver. I think they're already braced for it. They're ready for it. I think the Canuck fan base is too. I had Vancouver last year better than they were. They had a lot of challenges, and I was wrong about that, but I thought they were going to show better. So that means they've made changes. They will be better this year. And so when I look at the division, I have Vegas in their own class. I have Edmonton and Calgary and Vancouver, and I'm putting Seattle in there as the teams that are going to push. And then you've got the California teams who are in a cycle. I don't like to call it a rebuild. I think the salary cap has led us to cycles. Teams go through cycles. So they're in that cycle after being great for so long. You pay a bit of a price as you try to work your way back, because that's the only way you work back. Now, that's not to discount what they could do with the young players. The Ducks and the Kings and the Sharks are trying to put on the ice here. You know, that will make them competitive, and the entire league is, as you know, like, there's no league that has better competitive balance than the NHL. So I think because of that, the Vancouver rivalry, these will be two natural teams. For instance, one of their games will be the first game after the Christmas break, right? So that's sensational. Seattle will be in Vancouver. It's a 27-minute flight, I guess. So that's what you want. You want that New York type of rivalry right around the holidays, because The fans are going to wake up after Christmas and say, okay, now we got a rivalry game. And the teams are relatively fresh because they don't have to travel far. And I think by then it'll be a very important game. And my hope is that this team will have relevant hockey in February and March, rather March and April. I keep forgetting that there's nothing happening other than the Olympics in February, right? So March and April, that's what you're looking for. And the push for the playoff spot.
Yeah, we're sick of being nice to our family. Let's go let some vitriol out against our arch enemies in Seattle or Vancouver.
Yeah. See you guys later.
Exactly. John, last question for you. You talk about, you know, the Kraken, you know, becoming part of the fabric of Seattle sporting scene and being part of the fabric of the Seattle community. Who's that one player that's sort of, you know, sort of taking that lead and becoming that sort of face of the franchise more than some of the other guys or more than Ron Francis has been, you know, as he's been building this franchise on ice? Who's that guy who's going to sort of take that mantle as the face of the Kraken franchise?
Well, I think, you know, as the season goes along, Mark Giordano will evolve into that just organically based on his character and his history of being a leader and what he's going to mean to the team on the ice. But I can tell you, just based on the summer and the recent jersey launch, the team launched its jerseys on Wednesday for the public. A huge, huge turnout. Lines around the practice facility to get into the – they used one of the rinks as the store. They have a team store there, but they used one of the three rinks. And the floor of the rink is a big store with displays and jerseys everywhere, cash registers all over the place. It was unbelievable. But the jerseys that I saw the most coming out of there were Brandon Tanev, Jamie Oleksiak, the big rig, and the goalie, Philip Grubauer. Those were the three. You know, the goalie's always popular. And Tanev will be, you know, chaotic every time he gets on the ice, right? And he has the hair and the smile. He's a great human being, great kid. From what I've heard about him, I don't really know him yet, but I know that he's going to connect with the fan base based on how he plays as a high energy player. You guys are familiar with him, obviously, there. And then Oleksiak is just this big, toothless guy, right? Like, I love the fact that he goes toothless most of the time. It's a throwback to what a hockey player is supposed to look like. And he got up on that stage and had that grin with the teeth missing, and the place just went crazy. And you know what? His play, too, will be inspiring for the crowd because he's physical and he doesn't take anything from the other side. And so that's what I see as popular guys just based on jersey sales. But I think as the season goes along, they all write their story. That's the beauty of an expansion team. That's what we saw with the Misfits in Las Vegas, as they called themselves. You've got guys who are going to come together for one common goal for real. That's usually the case in every market, every training camp, but the guys come in with a previous history. Teams that underachieved come in with that, we got to get revenge back somehow. Teams that had success come in maybe a little bit high on their success and can have a hangover from the previous year. Or there's built-in issues contractually and personality-wise that are already evident with the team. This is like going to school on the first day in a brand new city. All these guys come in at the same time. They all have a reason why they're here. They all probably don't like the reason that they're here, but are very happy once they get here. I can relate to it. In my own world, that's how I feel. I never thought I'd leave Carolina ever. And that's what happened. And it was unfortunate and too bad, but I've been given a new lease. And I know that after doing years of the national work, I really enjoyed that. Hope to do a little more of that moving forward. But I really miss being with a team as a broadcaster, and I think there's nothing like it. So getting that connection with the fans. So that's what this story will be all about, how each of these players kind of repurpose, reset their careers, and that'll be fun to watch.
John Forslund is the Seattle Kraken play-by-play broadcaster. The Jets play in Seattle December 9th before Seattle returns to Winnipeg on January 8th and then again on April 13th.
John, sorry. I was going to say, Drew, but before we let John go, I mean, I know we're about a month away from the home opener, but can you give us any you know, sneak peek of who, you know, what musical act is going to be doing the opening night anthem? Like, I was kind of secretly hoping it might be Pearl Jam.
Well, a lot of the fans here were hoping that was the act that would open the arena. You know, Eddie Vedder lives right across the water from where I'm at in the West Side, yeah. I believe. And so Coldplay will open the arena. That'll be oh, magical. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Coldplay will open the arena on October 22nd and the Kraken play Vancouver on the 23rd on Saturday night. And, I don't know. I don't have any information that way, but I know it will be special. It will have a Seattle flavor attached to it, and maybe something like that happens. But more or less, if we can get him at games on a regular basis and yeah. make him part of the Kraken experience, that's the goal. Yeah,
the Seattle music scene would certainly be tying the Seattle music scene to the Kraken would be mm-hmm. beneficial for all involved, undoubtedly. John, appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. We'll see you in person again real soon. Good luck with Seattle. Thanks so much for joining us.
Anytime, guys. My pleasure. Have a great season, and we'll chat soon. Thanks for having me.
Take care. John. There he goes. John Forslund, Seattle Kraken broadcaster, joining us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's take our final break. When we come back, we'll wrap this Saturday show. Much more to discuss. Stay tuned. You're listening. You're watching. You're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Some fun interviews today. Dominic Toninato from a Jets perspective. Always great to hear from him. Some nice insight. And then John Forslund, certainly one of the premier broadcasters in the game of hockey. Good friend of our show going back to his Carolina days.
He's an amazing person. We've had a chance to meet him a couple times. And you're right, Drew. I mean, there's a lot of great broadcasters out there. I mean, obviously, you know, with Dennis Bayak and Paul Edmonds here in Winnipeg and others. But I mean, he is certainly in the US and everywhere. He's amazing. And like you said, we had him on many times on 1290 when he was the Carolina Hurricanes broadcaster. And I don't think there's anybody better, you know, to be the first ever, you know, Seattle Kraken TV play-by-play broadcaster. It's just going to be such fun. Like, I know some people, yeah. you know, think that maybe, you know, 32 teams is too much. That's fine. But it's just so exciting. Like I listening to John, you know, talk about, you know, Climate Pledge Arena. I mean, I can't speak for you guys, but I'd love to visit, you know, Seattle one day and check out a Kraken game, you know, obviously when things calm down a little bit. So it's going to be very exciting to see, you know, how that team plays this year.
Undoubtedly, you're right about that. A signing to announce before we wrap up on this Saturday morning.
Big Z.
Zdeno Chara, the Big Z. Ezzy, did you see the news yet? You want to guess?
No. Going back home.
Guess, Ezzy. Where do you think he's going?
Did he sign with the Bruins?
No, nope. Going back home.
Czech Republic.
No, Slovakia. Not literally home, but like where it all started for him.
The Islanders?
The New York Islanders have signed Zdeno Chara to a one-year contract. No word on the status of Alexei Yashin, but Zdeno Chara signed a one-year contract, according to Kevin Weeks. Will return, will play at the age of 44, and will play for the New York Islanders.
Well, you know what? The fact that Yager's still playing is really incredible. I mean, we know he's one of the best of all time, but yeah, I mean that's very interesting. The Islanders already have an absolutely stacked group of defensemen, you know, with Ryan Pulock and Adam Pellick, you know, Scott Mayfield, you know, the list goes on and on. But Noah Dobson is another guy I forgot to mention there. But yeah, very interesting. Didn't necessarily see that coming. But, you know, Lou Lamoriello signed Zach Parise a little bit late there, right? We knew that was a really badly kept secret. Everybody knew that Parise was going to sign with the Islanders. But Chara, where it all started.
Exactly. Where it all started all those many years ago. That's it for this Saturday morning. Before we go, I got to say a couple of birthday shout-outs. Three birthday shout-outs. My buddy Charlie. Happy birthday, Charlie. My buddy Benji. Happy birthday, Benji. My daughter Erin tomorrow. Happy birthday, Aaron. Got to throw those in.
Right. And of course, you're not going to mention that Dave's birthday was on Wednesday because I know you didn't text him for his birthday.
I definitely didn't know it was Dave's birthday. Dave, happy birthday.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Well, Drew, I should also mention that I didn't wish Dave a happy birthday. And when I walked into Dave's house And I asked him why he wasn't answering my text messages from last night. He mentioned that he had people over. And I said, what's the occasion? And he said, for my birthday. And then I realized that I really dropped the ball and forgot to wish Dave a happy birthday. So I'd like to officially wish Dave M, he's one of my best friends, a happy belated birthday, even though...
How do you treat your enemies?
Is 3 days late? Like, have I missed the window?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Definitely.
No. Have I missed the Manuk window?
No. I keep it usually about a week. I'm usually pretty late on things, so a week is what I give it. For most people, it has to be within... from midnight to midnight, but as he gets a little extension.
A couple of years ago, I missed Richie's birthday. In case people don't know who I'm talking about, he used to be a member of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show many, many years ago. I forgot his birthday a couple of years ago, and he didn't talk to me for like weeks. Like he was holding a grudge. He never holds a grudge against me, but I made it up to him.
He might have just used that as an excuse to not talk to you, I got to say. Maybe he was looking for an opportunity to depart, get a little Ezzy free time in that window. In any event, wanted to give those birthday shout-outs, including you as well there, Mr. Manuk. Got to give a big shout-out to our sponsors because they make the show a possibility.
From the peeps. I appreciate it. Thanks,
everyone. Look at everybody pouring in with the birthday wishes. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Boston Pizza, and our friends at Seagram. Support these fine businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. As I mentioned, big thanks to Dominic Tononato. Big thanks to John Forsland. In case you missed any of the show, it'll be broadcast immediately on our YouTube channel. You can watch it there again. Of course, if you prefer to download the podcast edition, you can do that as well. It'll be on your podcast. It'll be in your podcast player probably in the next couple of hours, not very long from now. On your way out on this Saturday morning, be sure to hit the like button. Be sure to hit the subscribe button. Don't miss a minute of Illegal Curve Hockey and all of our various broadcasts. For Dave Manuk in the top right, for Ezra Ginsberg in the bottom middle, I am your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Thanks for chatting. This has been the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.